Thank you, Jerry. Joe, we will talk to you tomorrow. And the Blue Jays lose a tight one, 3-2, the final score to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. But you know what? I will take a game like this because more often than not this year, the Blue Jays will win a game like this. And this is the kind of starting pitching that the Blue Jays have been looking for all season long. Aaron Sanchez gives up 3 runs on 6 hits and 7 1/3 innings. Keep that up, and things will be just fine in Blue Jays land. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Again, we'll take your calls across the network for a few minutes now. And then on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904, all the way up till 11 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm led to understand that the Rogers radio app is playing hockey as well. Try to figure out what's going on there because, aha, as we're told, Rogers radio app plays our web stream is what they're called, web stream. So, yeah, you're not going to be able to get us there either. Either on Sportsnet 590 The Fan or on the TV channel. And if you're watching the hockey game, you do a little picture-in-picture thing and listen to us. They're still getting like a big antenna on your radio or something. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Steve is in Port Perry. And, Steve, you're going to lead things off on Blue Jays Talk. Welcome.
Evening, Michael.
Evening.
What a great I'm so impressed with Sanchez tonight. And like you said in the call, with what the doctor ordered, the doctor needed to hear that one. He pitched great, great pitching on both sides tonight.
Are you a doctor?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you kind of meant there. But all right. No, go ahead.
Mike, I wanted to ask you, if you could be GM for a week, what would you do? We're not in panic mode. We're seeing the pieces fall in, but if you could put the GM hat on for a day or so, what would you do?
Right now?
Yes.
Nothing.
Too early?
There's nothing to do. I mean, there was a trade made today between the Cubs and Mariners, Wellington Castillo for Yoervis Medina. So you're getting a middling relief pitcher for a backup catcher who is just okay. I certainly wouldn't have wanted to trade a healthy Deonner Navarro for a guy like Yoervis Medina.
No.
There just aren't trades to be made right now. And it's too bad because you'd love to say, yeah, I would do this, 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 and this, and that would just fix this ball club right up. But right now I don't think there's anything Alex Anthopoulos can do except, you know, maybe you bring Daniel Norris back and you put Marco Estrada back in the bullpen. I think if Aaron Sanchez had pitched poorly tonight, some people would have suggested putting him back in the bullpen and bringing up a starter. You can bring Randy Wolf up, but really, I mean, you're not going to get rid of Drew Hutchison. You're not going to get rid of R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley or anything like that. There's really nothing you can do right now. Mm. Sorry, say that again?
I don't like the idea of trading a superstar away to bring in another one. And I think you said over the years you're just filling one spot in for another.
Yeah, but then you can't make a trade like that mid-season anyway.
That's the only thing I don't understand about baseball, why they wait till the end. Because maybe not in this circumstances, but if you're 10 games out in July, is that not like panic mode or you're still sitting pretty?
Well, no, you're never sitting pretty there. But first of all, I don't believe there's ever a time to panic. I think panic leads to poor decisions and messes you up for a long time. But it's not that they're waiting. It's that you need a dance partner. You know, if I want to trade Jose Bautista for a great starting pitcher, which I don't want to do, but if you want to do that, well, you got to find someone who's willing to give up a great starting pitcher for Jose Bautista. And I don't think there's any team that would be interested in Bautista, who's a free agent after next year, is a contending team. Because why would a rebuilding team want a guy on the wrong side of 30 who's going to be a free agent after next year, right?
Right.
So why would a contending team give up a top-of-the-rotation starting pitcher?
I agree.
They wouldn't.
When do you see Norris coming back, Michael?
I don't know. I hope before the end of the month. I think another start or two in Buffalo, and we'll see him back here.
Love the arm. Thank you for taking my call, Mike.
All right, appreciate it. Yeah, I love the arm, too. And his last start in Buffalo was solid. And I would love to see him have one dominant start down there before coming back. But I also think that he'll be fine back up here in the major leagues. And I'd like to see him back. He's definitely getting one more start in Buffalo, you would imagine. And maybe after that. Your phone calls continue. Blue Jays talk continues until 11 o'clock Eastern time. So give us a call at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays fall 3-2 to Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It is the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
You already think you know more than Gibby and Alex Anthopoulos, so you must know more than Wilner, right? Blue Jays talk with Mike Wilner after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Well, that's going to do it for us as far as the network portion of the program is concerned. The Blue Jays fall 3-2 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. A terrific pitcher's duel. The Jays wind up on the wrong side. I'm sure there will be callers who will ask and debate about Josh Donaldson's decision to try for the lead runner and Eric Ibar in the eighth inning rather than throw to first and take an out. I'm assuming he thought he didn't have a play at first. It was a slowly hit ball, and Cole Calhoun, who was quick, was running. And truth is, I think Donaldson would have had a play at first. He missed Ibar, bases loaded, sac fly, wins the game. But you know what? Josh Donaldson, other than Aaron Sanchez, might have been the Blue Jays' best player tonight. He drove in both their runs. He made several tremendous defensive plays. So these are the things that happen. What are you going to do? Right now, Yankees and Nationals are tied 6-6. That game's in the bottom of the ninth in Washington. Red Sox lead the Rangers 4-3. That game's in the top of the ninth in Boston. And the Tampa Bay Rays beat Atlanta 5-3. Series continues tomorrow. We're on at 7 o'clock Eastern. Drew Hutchison against Jared Weaver. And Blue Jays talk continues on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, right up until 11 o'clock Eastern time. You've been listening to Home Hardware, Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. For Jerry Howard, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Mark Boffo, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Rogers.
Again, the 3-2 pitch. Fly ball rock deep right center field. Long high drive. Mike Trout back to the wall. He jumps. It hits the top of the wall, and there she goes.
Leadoff home run for Josh Donaldson. He's been a leadoff hitter in the major leagues three times, and twice he has led off the game with a home run. He drove in both Blue Jays runs tonight, but it wasn't enough. The Angels beat the Jays 3-2. Ironically, the winning run scores because of what might have been a misplay by Donaldson, a ground ball to third with runners at first and second and one out, and he went to tag Eric Ibar, and Ibar slid around him. Donaldson probably thinking he didn't have a shot at Cole Calhoun at first, but it looked to the rest of us like he probably did. The game's a lot faster down there. Blue Jays lose 3-2 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So yesterday, the best hitting team in the league beat the best pitching team in the league. Tonight, the best pitching team in the league beat the best hitting team in the league. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance. 1-888-666-0590. Your calls coming up. But before we get to the next call, let's give a listen to the skipper. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of tonight's 3-2 loss.
Gibby, it's probably unfair to be critical of Josh Donaldson after what he did tonight, but the game-winning play, was that something that you didn't want to see?
You mean the squibber to third? No, I thought he did the right thing. I thought he was just like a perfect place ball. It was kind of cueing. You know, and he's kind of with Calhoun. He shifted over a little bit. And knowing he runs pretty good going there, going away from the bag, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was just perfect place ball, really. Because, I mean, he had a hell of a game at third. You know, he did. He really did.
Regarding Sanchez, it's kind of cruel justice that he kind of escaped so many walk problems earlier in the season, and tonight he issues relatively few, and they all bite him.
Yeah, you know what? Sanchez was great tonight. He really was. I mean, from the get-go, you know, pounding the strikes. I mean, it was fun to watch. Ground ball after ground ball. Got some strikeouts tonight. Yeah, it's one of those games, you know. It was a tight game, and then Santiago was really good. You know, he was picking the plate apart pretty good, was pounding that inside corner, you know, and painting it pretty good. So it was just one of those games. And then, and of course, that little ball to third base, and then, you know, Freeze has been known to get some big driving, some big runs in his career, and he got the sack fly. So, but it was a good ball game. I thought we played well. You know, after the leadoff home run, you think, okay, maybe we're gonna, you know, we might have to pick up where we left off yesterday. That didn't happen because Santiago was really good. But then when they get late to Smith and Houston, you know, those guys are pretty good.
I know that, you know, a loss is a loss, but can you look at this and say, you know, if you can get even close to this from Sanchez on a regular basis, you're going to win a lot more than you're going to lose when he's out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big game for Sanchez. You know, he pitched good enough to win. You know, their guy did too. That was the problem, but... Yeah, he'll take a lot from this game. You know, he went deep into the game. He was very efficient, and I mean, it just shows what he does, what he can do when he's throwing strikes. Yeah, I mean, he can be a ground ball machine. You know, he can. You know, he's. And I think that, you know, you look at his starts. He just keeps getting better and better and better and better. And when the season's all said and done, he's going to be on his way.
John, after Sanchez walked two in the seventh and then they scored the tying run, did you give much consideration to going to your bullpen at the start of the eighth?
No, I thought he was still good, you know, for my judgment. And of course, then he gave up the leadoff hit to Ibar, but then he got the ground ball to, you know, to Trout. We're hoping he'd get Pujols and we're going to walk Calhoun. Calhoun was really the guy that was taking the good swings off him all night. But, you know, after the walk, you know, okay, let's try something different here, you know, because I didn't want him facing Calhoun again unless we could afford to walk him. So, but, no, I thought he was still good enough to, you know, my judgment.
Gibby, your team's just won once when you score three, once when you've scored four, and none when you've scored less than that. I mean, what do you make of the fact that these kind of 2-1, 3-2 games often get away from your team?
Oh, but we're not very good at them, I guess you could say. But like I said yesterday, we're playing good, clean baseball for the most part. We're just getting beat, you know, and either we're getting outpitched or, you know, when they shut our offense down, you know, we're just not, you know, we're not holding them in check enough. That's the way it goes sometimes. But, you know, the guys are busting it every day. That's all you can ask for, and it's hurting them, you know. So, but I know one thing they've been doing all year. They'll show up tomorrow, and we'll go get them again.
Are you concerned at all about the workload that Osuna is having to carry? I mean, he's your best reliever. He's the guy you continually call on in tough situations. But he's carrying a pretty heavy load.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about it yet. But, yeah, he's been that good, you know, and you get in those kind of, you know, those tight games like that, you want him. Now, it's back-to-back days for him. You won't see him tomorrow. You know, we've been pretty conscious of you know, when he throws a couple of days in a row, that we give him enough rest. So that's definitely on our mind. But when you're good, you're good.
And Roberto Osuna has been good. He gave up the go-ahead run tonight on a sacrifice fly. After that Josh Donaldson play where Donaldson went for the lead runner, Eric Ibar, and Ibar slid around him. John Gibbons off the top saying that he thought that was the move that Donaldson should have made. I thought there was a play at first. I think a lot of people did as well. But, I mean, I'm not – who am I to question Josh Donaldson? He's been perhaps the best player on this team all season long and a spectacular defender a whole lot of the time. And he was still plus one, even if that one run was his fault, because he drove in two and he started a double play. He had a tremendous game all around. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays talk is upon us. And we're taking your calls. Alan in Toronto. Well, welcome to the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Mike. I was in attendance at today's game. The top of the fifth, E6 Ibar. Pilar could have walked to second. Well, not exactly walked, but he could have trotted to second. He didn't have the foggiest notion where the ball was. And Giantova, he had to retrieve the ball. You know, came on all the way from second. He was not very heads up that that play, was he? He should have taken off.
No, he shouldn't have. Alan, you get on a ground ball you hit to the shortstop that he bounces. You run down the line. You run through the bag, which is what Pilar should have done. There is no way that you're going to take that chance when the ball barely got away from Albert Pujols and try to make it to second base before Ibar gets over or before somebody else comes over to cover. You should have been out. You're safe at first. The ball is still, just outside the dirt cutout around first base. That's a huge, huge, huge risk to take to try to get to second base.
And Pilar was robbed in the second inning. Featherstone made a big play. That was labeled extra base hit. It was unbelievable.
And those were hits that got through David Freese last night at third base, and maybe that's why Mike Socha made that switch.
Why did Gibbons come out in the sixth inning after Trout's hit and Pujols was coming to the plate? They questioned something. What were they questioning then?
Yeah, I think they were looking to see. Trying to think back, because Trout broke his bat. Maybe he was just checking on Russ Martin. You were here, so you couldn't have seen the replay. The broken bat by Trout hit Russ Martin in the neck. And the umpire as well. Martin got hit by the barrel of the bat just on the side of the neck, and the head of the bat hit Martin, and the handle that was broken hit the umpire. So that's what they were just going to check out to make sure everybody was okay, and it seems as though they were.
And there was a good bunt by Zones. This time it worked out, but usually I'm against any kind of bunting because it's a precious out. But this time it worked out, so, you know, it doesn't work out all the time, though.
No, it doesn't. And when you're lefty-lefty with Goins and it's first and second and nobody out in a tight game like that, I'm totally fine with Ryan Goins bunting. He's the only one in this lineup tonight against a left-handed pitcher that I would want to be sacrificing, but totally cool with that. And Goins, to his credit, put down a nice bunt, and that's been a problem for him. And his technique wasn't good again tonight, but he at least got the ball down and got the job done.
And Encarnacion, are you critical of him not hustling, or he's just not physically able to hustle as much? He must be playing hurt because I did not expect him to be on first as much as he is this year. And he has to be playing hurt because his speed, he was average speed. He was certainly better than Delgado or Olrud when you rank his speed. But now he just does what's necessary when he's running out of ground ball, just in case a fielder flubs it, because anything can happen in this game. But, are you critical of him not being not hustling?
No, I'm not, because I think for him a lot of it would be false hustle, just to show us that he's trying hard. Last year, Edwin blew a quadriceps muscle running out of ground ball. And stretching a first base to try to beat a double play, and he was lost for 6 weeks. I want that bat in the lineup as often as possible. I don't care whether he runs ground balls out or not. He's not going to reach on any ground ball unless somebody really, really, really screws things up. I mean, even if he was running full out, he's not going to reach on a bobbled grounder. Something's going to have to happen. And when that happens, he'll more than likely be able to get there anyway. I have no issue at all with Edwin not running out routine ground balls if it's going to keep him in the lineup. Thanks for the call, Alan. Appreciate it. And let's move on to NYC. Daniel is in the city. What don't sleep? Welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Thanks. I'm listening in the dark tonight. You guys cut me off for some hockey playoffs. So
yeah, sorry that we were not online tonight, unfortunately. But hey, you got to listen by being on hold, right?
Yeah.
See, way to cheat the system.
Do what I can.
Nice work.
So a couple of things. One, the last few nights you've got a lot of calls about Fire Gibby, and I was just curious your opinion. How much of that do you think is just regular fan frustration, and how much do you think is it about the hockey fan culture that people just kind of apply to baseball, that think, you know, the coach rattles the cage of the players and, you know, the players can will themselves to play better and all these type of things?
I think it has a lot to do with both, to be honest. I think that there is that mentality, and it's not just here because of hockey in Canada and stuff like that. I mean, it exists in the States as well, this idea of manager as motivator, manager as a creator of better players, that a good manager can make a player play better. I don't think that. I mean, you look at example after example after example that has shown that's just not the case at all. But I think a lot of people believe it. And a lot of that is the media's fault, because the media does such a wonderful job of deifying coaches and managers. And coaches and managers who go into broadcasting have to talk about how much what they do matters and how much of an effect they can have, because they have to justify future employment or make sure people keep talking about how wonderful coaches are. And they're good and they work hard and all that stuff. But, in hockey and football and basketball, there's certainly a case to be made for motivation. And, those are continuous sports where you can take possession away from the other team. Baseball, you can't. Everybody gets their turn. So I really do think a lot of it has to do with the message and the narrative that has been foisted upon people for 100 years, maybe more, about what coaches, what managers can do and the brilliance of people in those positions. But the other thing is, too, when people can't think of a reason to, can't come up with why exactly you should do this, why what exactly needs to change, more like, what exactly this team about the personnel needs to change, then it's always so easy to fall back on, well, they need to fire the manager.
Do you think any of it at all, at least from the media side, is that, let's just use Ari Dickey as just an example, even though I don't think he's as bad as, he's been bad recently, but if a particular reporter was piling on every day on the air, on the writing, whatever he does, that Ari Dickey's just, mechanics are flawed, or he's too old, or whatever the case is, and that would have that reporter lose out on getting FaceTime with somebody like R.A. Dickey or any of the players?
It's possible,
like that,
sure.
The managers have to talk to the media whether they like it or not?
Yeah, but they don't have to talk to every member of the media. They can be, certainly there. I've seen lots of examples where a manager is very curt with somebody, won't answer a question. There have been times where a manager has not spoken until a certain reporter is removed from the scrum. So it's not quite at the level of a player who can just ignore you, and the manager is required to talk to the media basically before and after every game. But it can, the message can get across.
Okay, and then just leads you into my point about tonight's game, actually, about manager, coaches, that type of thing. I found the last two at-bats by Colabello and Pilar, pretty brutal at bats. Even though Pilar hit the ball hard, the guy hung his slider, but there were six pitches in a row that just were the same exact pitch, pretty much the same speed, same location, not on the plate. And given it was the end of the game down by one, I would hope they would try to grind out at bats a little better instead of being fooled the same way six times in a row over two batters. And I was just wondering if that's something that, they would get yelled at after the game. They just kind of chalk it up to, this guy's a tough closer and that's it? Or how does that play out?
Well, first of all, they're not children, so they're not going to get yelled at after.
I don't mean yelled at. I mean, explained, hey, guys, you got to do a better job in this scenario.
Here's the thing. Houston Street's really good, and Houston Street just signed a big contract, and there's a reason he just signed a big contract, and he's been one of the best closers in the game when he's been healthy over pretty much his entire career. He's really good, and his job is to make a hitter think a certain pitch is coming and have that pitch be a different pitch. So that's column A. Column B is that Chris Colabello and Kevin Pillar are not above average major league hitters, and certainly not against right-handed pitching is either one of them an above average major league hitter. You can make the case, in fact, that neither one of them is even an average major league hitter. Colabello is the fifth or sixth outfielder on this team, pressed into duty because of injury and because Dalton Pompey is down in Buffalo. And Kevin Pillar, if he wasn't playing as spectacular a center field as he was, he would be on the verge of maybe being sat or being sent out because he's been hitting poorly. So he had a tough combination in there. You have a really, really, really good closer and two guys who ordinarily would never be up in a one-run game in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I'll let you go is I just wanted to say it was really fun to watch Sanchez essentially aim for the middle of the plate and let that sinker just move to the corners.
Isn't that something? And that's really all he has to do with his stuff.
Yeah.
No need to pick. No need to do anything. Just let the natural movement take over.
There, get them thinking, and then let the movement take it. It's really pretty to watch.
Yep.
And I hope he builds on that, and this is what it's going to look like from here on out.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too, because that would really be something. I mean, I don't expect this every time, but if you get this, more often than not, they're going to win a whole bunch of his starts. Thank you for the call, Daniel. Blue Jays lose it 3-2 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And I understand the Blue Jays have a horrible record when they don't score at least, what, 5 runs? Something like 2-16 when they score 4 runs or less. But remember, too, that they've won a bunch of games where the opposition has scored 3 runs or fewer, but they've just happened to score 6 or 7 or 10 or 12. So it's not as cut and dried as it looks. Eddie is in Fort Erie. Eddie, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
All right, go ahead.
I wanted to talk about Sanchez's performance tonight. It was, you know what, he pitched one heck of a game. I was, you know, watching the pitches he did, and you know what, he wasn't afraid of any of the tough hitters like Trout and Pujols and people like that. You know, he really took it to him. But I wanted to ask you something that I was kind of wondering. In the eighth inning, when he came back out in a tie game, and essentially, you know, he left with 2 runners on, and Osuna gave up the sacrifice fly. Do you think that even though it's the pitch count that Sanchez had, which was at 96, I believe,
yep,
do you think that they would have gone to the bullpen in a tie game, knowing in the bottom of the eighth you were having Bautista, Encarnacion, and Martin do up, or would you want to see Sanchez go to the eighth and see what he can do?
I was thrilled to see Sanchez come out for the eighth inning. I mean, you look at what he'd done over the first 7, and you mentioned that he pitched without fear of those big hitters, right? Eric Ibar, Mike Trout, and Albert Pujols, the three of them, there'd been solid contact once in 9 at-bats with the three of those guys, and that was Pujols lining out to shortstop that Ryan Goins made that great play on. So he had thoroughly baffled them all night, and he was tiring, sure, but still only at 96 pitches. I you know, this is your 22-year-old horse that you want to see what he's made of, and you want to give him those opportunities to pitch in those big situations because you hope down the line, and not down the line in like 2-3 years from now, but down the line this year, you're going to be getting big performances from him in big spots like that. I'm totally fine with sending Aaron Sanchez out for the eighth inning right there.
So in other words, you would have been fine if he got through the eighth, and you would have been fine with Bautista and Encarnacion and Martin coming up, even though they were going to be down by 1 run, which was the case tonight, right? You were fine with that?
Well, I would hope that they wouldn't be down 1 run when they get to the bottom of the eighth inning, but I don't care who's coming up for me. I mean, I would rather have good hitters coming up than not good hitters, obviously, but I don't quite know what that has to do with anything.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you. And it's, you know, Osuna pitched yesterday. You want to avoid him tonight if you can. And then who's your next best right-handed option? Tapera? Delabar? Hendricks got knocked all around the yard the last time he pitched, though he pitched well tonight. I think you're a little scared of this bullpen right now. And if Sanchez is pitching well, which he was, why not? Mike in Uxbridge. Mike, you're next on Blue Jays Talk. Good evening.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Still good, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just calling to say, you're really happy to see Sanchez. really getting ahead of the hitters, which, you know, made it less of an issue of the control issues that he's been having. So that's my first point, and it was really nice to see him get going. Now my next point is, Dickey and Burley, they are under contract just this year, correct?
Dickey has an option for next year, but yes.
Okay. Now, if we are out of it at the trade deadline, or not out of it, let's say, but a decent size margin between us and the lead in the American League, do you see us doing maybe something similar that the Boston Red Sox did, as far as kind of unloading, you know, guys like maybe Encarnacion and Batista to retool in the next season as far as the offseason went?
Are you talking? It depends how far out of it you're talking about. You know, are we talking about like out of first place or out of the wild card spot? Where how terrible is this team?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just speaking on a what if basis.
But that's what I'm saying. In your what if scenario, how terrible is this team?
I personally think that we're going to be there. Like I said,
right. That's not what I'm asking you. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying in this scenario that you're giving me, fast forward to July 20th. How bad is this team on July 20th that you that you're asking me whether or not they'd blow it up?
Okay, maybe nine and a half games out of the AL East, maybe 5.5 to 6 out of the wild card.
Yeah, no. I think you'd have to be double digits out and playing really poorly, or be 6 games out at the end of July of the wild card and have 7 teams in front of you. So you're talking about maybe having one of the worst records in the league. And if that happens, if they have one of the worst records in the league and they're way out, then yeah, you would explore those trades. But if you have one of the worst records in the league, then Burley's not pitching well, Dickey's not pitching well, Edwin's not having a good year. Batista's a 10-5 guy, so he can turn down a trade anyway. So it'll make things more difficult. But you certainly would be exploring those things if this team is looking at a ghost of a chance at the playoffs when the trade deadline comes around.
No, yeah, and I completely agree. Like I said, I think that this team is better than that. Just on the what if basis that we were talking about, you would. It's just the uncertainty with Dickey and Burley going forward, as far as in the rotation, maybe pulling the trigger on those big name guys a year early to prevent disaster going forward. You know what I mean? Like walking for nothing.
I don't think there's any disaster going forward happening. If Batista and Edwin walk, the Blue Jays will get a first round pick back. So it'll take a while to recoup, but they'll be able to get some serious talent. Burley. I think Burley's going to retire after this year, but the Blue Jays, I would think, would qualify him because they'd take him back at 15. And Dickey, I don't know what they're going to do with the option, but if he has a last three quarters of the season like his normal last three quarters of the season, then it's, of course, you pick it up and you bring him back and you see what's going on. But I really don't think that they're in the they're even thinking about the blow-it-up thing. First-round picks are pretty valuable if you draft well, and the Blue Jays have done that the last little while. So I don't think we're going to see any kind of fire sale here.
Yeah, because we know that the bats are going to be there, and, you know, like I said, Sanchez pitching the way he did today is definitely a step in the right direction. And as far as, you know, three of the other guys go, you know that Hutchinson, Burley, and Dickey aren't going to end the season with all ERAs north of 5, right? So
you certainly hope not, yeah.
There's definitely potential, and, you know, like you said, nice to see Sanchez finally starting to get the starting rotation rolling the way it needs to. All right, I'm going to hang up and listen now. Mike, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Blue Jays fall 3-2 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim tonight. Steven is in Sanford. Hello, Steven.
Hey, Mike. Just had one comment and two quick questions. I know there wasn't a show last night, and I really wanted to get on and throw some love Gibbons' way. Because a lot of people like to bash him, and I don't know if anyone would have actually called in and given him credit for bringing Valencia back out after he was going to pitch hit for him, and he came up with that clutch hit yesterday.
Yeah, but I think that was honestly less managerial genius than just figuring that was the best of all evils, right? You don't want Danny Valencia hitting against a right-handed pitcher, but if you use Carrera, then they bring in the lefty, and you don't want Carrera hitting against a lefty. And if you bring in Smoke, then you burn Smoke there. Chances are they bring in the lefty to turn him around, and you don't want your one shot of using Justin Smoke to have him hit right-handed. So you have three options. None of them were good. He picked what he felt was the least poor option, and Danny Valencia hit an 0-2 pitch for a two-run double, which I don't think anybody could have counted on happening. But, you know, I like John Gibbons a lot, but I don't think that was a stroke of genius or anything.
All right, and then two quick questions. One is the broadcast auction coming up. I didn't see your name as in part of the prize with Tom Cheek. Is that just an oversight on the website, or are you not involved?
There's a Tom Cheek prize?
Sorry, not Tom Cheek. There's a broadcast prize, and to come up to the booth and
Oh, the charity auction. Yeah, I know nothing about that. Nobody said anything to me at all, so I have no idea. I'll be happy to do whatever they want me to do, but no one's approached me about anything so far.
Okay, and last question is, looking forward to tomorrow. Weaver's been a bit of a Jays killer in the past, is he not?
No kidding, yeah. A serious Blue Jays killer.
Okay, so hopefully we can get that turned around and get our luck in a better fortune. Thanks for the call.
All right, appreciate the call. Yeah, Jared Weaver has been a big problem for your Toronto Blue Jays over the entirety of his career, whether he throws, you know, in the low 90s or whether he throws in the low 80s. He has baffled this team, and it really hasn't seemed to matter who's on it either. So that is a tough task ahead for the Blue Jays tomorrow night as they try to give themselves a chance to win this series. And it's always been a pretty interesting thing. You know, the Angels have the best pitching team in the league. The Blue Jays have the best hitting team in the league. Blue Jays have the worst pitching team in the league. The Angels have the second worst hitting team as far as runs scored is concerned. So it's interesting to try to figure out what's going to happen and to watch it happen. Yesterday, the hitting came to the fore. Today, it was all about the pitching. Jared Weaver in 12 starts against the Blue Jays is 9-2 with a 3.39 ERA, a WHIP of 1.05. He's allowed 78 base runners in 74 and a third innings with 76 strikeouts. So he has been awfully, awfully good against the Blue Jays over the course of his career. Here at Rogers Center, he's made 4 starts, 26 base runners in 25 innings, and 26 strikeouts. So, yeah, despite the declining velocity every year and who knows what, he ties up the Blue Jays something good whenever he pitches against him. And we shall see. We shall see. The phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays talk continues. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Pitch on the way, hit on the ground between third and short. That's a base hit into left field. Calhoun checks in to score to tie it. Up to second base goes Joyce, and the Angels have their second run here tonight.
RBI single by Chris Iannetta. He was 2-for-4 tonight. He had 3 hits last night, 3-for-4 last night, 2 doubles and a homer. He loves hitting against the Blue Jays. Really doesn't care to hit against anybody else. He drives in the tying run, and the Angels win it in the 8th. In that play, Josh Donaldson went for the lead runner there with runners at 1st and 2nd in the 8th. Getting some quotes from Donaldson on the Twitter from Arden Zwelling, who's down there in the clubhouse, or who's just back up. And Arden says, Josh Donaldson said, and I quote, "I thought there was going to be a play at third. I was wrong, and it ended up costing us." He went on to say Calhoun capped it off the end of the bat, and it was squibbing. "I know he's a good runner. I felt like I had an opportunity to get the out at third, and I wasn't able to do it." So there you go. Josh Donaldson taking ownership of his decision. Did it wind up costing the Blue Jays the game? no, it didn't wind up costing the Blue Jays the game. Had Donaldson gotten the out at third, there's nothing that says the Angels still wouldn't have scored. Had Donaldson gotten the out at first, there's nothing to say the Angels still wouldn't have scored. And had the Blue Jays gotten out of the inning in a 2-2 tie, sure, they have a better chance of winning. But would they have won? Did Donaldson lose the game? No. And did Donaldson drive in both Blue Jays runs and make a whole bunch of great defensive plays? Yeah. So don't put this one on Josh Donaldson. Blue Jays lose it 3-2 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I'm Mike Wilner, taking your calls on Blue Jays Talk up until the top of the hour. And let's get right back to it. Richard is in Toronto. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Mike. You've commented on how yesterday the best hitting team in baseball beat the best pitching team in baseball, and today the best pitching team in baseball beat the best hitting team in baseball. So obviously, by referring to the Blue Jays as the best hitting team in baseball, you're basing that on the fact that they've scored the most runs in the majors.
Yes.
But to me, to say that the Blue Jays are the best hitting team in baseball is somewhat deceiving and doesn't tell the whole story, because the fact of the matter is that the Blue Jays offense has been terribly inconsistent this season. It's basically all or nothing.
It's really not.
People go out and score 10 runs, and then the next game or two, they'll go out and score one or two and lose. I think there's been 8 games this season where the Blue Jays have scored multiple digits in runs, but there's also been 17 games this season where they've scored 3 runs or less. And if they haven't lost all of those games, they've lost close to all of those games. So while the pitching has obviously been the main culprit, I think the inconsistent offense has also contributed to their losing record, and I don't think that can be overlooked.
Okay. Your numbers are, I think you were one off with the double-digit team. What'd you say, 8 double-digit games?
I believe so.
Yeah, you're right. There are 8 double-digit games, and you're right. 17 games in which they've scored 3 runs or less, which means there have been 24 games in which they've scored 4 runs or more. I mean, look, no team is going to score 5 runs a game every game, right? I think there's this idea that there is such thing as a consistent offense, that there are 300 hitters who actually get 3 hits in every 10 at-bats, and there are teams that score, you know, 4 or 5 runs a game and never have games where they score 1 run or get shut out and don't have games where they score 9 or 10 runs, that there are these consistent offenses. I will take the team that's leading the league in runs scored 1,000 times out of 1,000 and be very, very happy with my offense. The problem has not been the offense. The problem has been a lack of consistency in starting pitching. And, in fact, it's worse than that, because I think a lot of people use consistency incorrectly. The problem has been really bad starting pitching for the most part this year. Tonight was one of the very rare nights where they had a terrific outing from a starting pitcher and didn't win the ballgame.
True, but I mean, don't you think a little more balanced run differential would be helpful?
Sure, it would be extremely helpful. I don't think that's controllable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they can actually control that? You know, when people say save some of these runs for tomorrow, it's always a joke, because they understand that you can't.
Mm-hmm. But does this, does this black and white difference in run differential exists with other teams to the same extent that it does with the Blue Jays?
No, because other teams don't score in double digits nearly as often as the Blue Jays do. Is there even another team that's got 4
runs or less as often as the Blue Jays
do? Oh, lots. Lots. Most teams, I would suggest, well, I don't know about most. A lot of teams, I would suggest, score 3 runs or fewer in more than half their games. We'd have to do some hard research on that. I'm not willing to put in the time, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I do think that happens a lot.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I understand what you're saying. I do. I just don't think it's realistic to say this team needs to have more games, needs to score five or six more often. Because, again, and I hate to harp on this because I know it's not what people want to hear. Hitting's really hard. Really hard. It is, when you look at all of sports, it is the, well, I was going to say it's the most difficult thing to master, but even that's not fair because it's impossible to master. No one in the history of this game has even been successful half the time at not getting out. It's really hard. Every time a batter steps in against a pitcher, the pitcher has the advantage. Every single time. Bruno is in Toronto. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk.
Mr. Wilner, how's it going today? Mike, it's first-time caller for me. I think that today's game actually strengthens the argument to kind of have robot umpires. I mean, from my standpoint, I'm all for getting calls right, and I think that in some instances today, there were clearly some missed calls, specifically behind the plate.
Oh, there were a ton.
So I was thinking that, you know, if we can't have robot umpires, what do you think of maybe having umpires that specialize in certain positions? I think that at least that way, maybe we'll add some consistency from game to game.
It's not an altogether terrible idea. I don't think we'll ever see it, but it's not a bad idea at all to have the best ball strike umpires call balls and strikes all the time. Now, there's this idea that exists in the game that working the plate in a game is really, really, really hard, and that's why after an umpire works the plate, he has to go handle third base for a game where you get almost no action, and then you go to second where you get a little more but still not a ton, then you go to first where you get a lot, and then you go back behind the plate 4 days later. So I wonder, though, I mean, if there are guys who are really, really good at calling balls and strikes and guys who are really, really bad at calling balls and strikes, now we have a very clear way to measure that. Why not let the good ball strike umps just work the plate more often and never let the guys who can't do it do it?
Makes sense to me.
Well, yeah, you suggested it.
Okay, I'll hang up now. Take care. Thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate it, Bruno. Angelo is in Brampton. Angelo, you're next. Hello, Angelo.
No
Angelo. No Angelo. Not hello, Angelo. Call back. And we'll get you on.
Give me a second. Go to Sanchez.
Before we get to our next caller, pardon me, let's hear from the guy who had the best start of his major league career tonight. Aaron Sanchez set a career high by going 7 1/3 innings, gave up 3 runs earned on 6 hits, walked 3, struck out 5, was in pretty much complete control of this game over the course of the first 6 innings, and then gave up a run in the 7th, and the bullpen gave up one of his runs in the 8th. He threw 106 pitches. He was outstanding tonight. Here's what Aaron Sanchez had to say.
A lot out of what happened tonight. And just...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously it's a tough loss, but a lot of good things happened out there for me today.
Can you elaborate on what you found that worked
just consistent with my heater. Just attacking guys, staying through Russ the whole game. Curveball as well, threw a couple changeups. Tough one.
Is it nice to prove that you can kind of bounce back after a rough outing you lost them?
Yeah, I mean, I still think there was a lot of good things out of that outing too. I mean, I had one bad inning and then I settled down and kept the team in the game. Tonight, same situation. Obviously, the runs were at a minimal. But we'll get back after tomorrow.
Aaron's had a release point thing that kind of allows you to be taking the command of the fastball specifically so consistently in the first game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, we did a lot of stuff this in between last start to this start, and I think it proved. Stay back a lot wetter. I think that's the biggest key, and everything kind of works off balance. And when I got that, everything was just out in front and just clicking.
Is that something that you feel from today is easily carried over to the next start? I mean, was that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you go back a couple starts ago, and I think it was there, and I showed spurts of it. You know, my start against Baltimore today was there, you know, for majority of the game. So take what's good out of this game, move on, and flush this one.
You're obviously excited after that double play in the six. Can you just describe your emotions out there, especially in that moment?
Yeah, obviously, it was the beginning. I mean, the game was real close, 2-1. You got their meat of the order up, and to come out of there with nothing, obviously, I mean, any athlete in that situation would be pretty pumped up.
What did it mean to you to have Gibby throw you back out in the eighth and the faith that he showed in you?
I mean, like I said, I'm going to take the ball until he takes it from me. And obviously, the confidence he has in me is months to none. And for me to go back out there for his, I mean, that is more confidence in myself, too.
So there's Aaron Sanchez talking about all the things that worked tonight and how pumped up he was after getting Albert Pujols in that double play. And that was really the only time he was in trouble over the course of the first six innings. And it wasn't hardly his fault. Eric Ibar with a little flare loop nothing over second base. Steve Tolleson almost hauled in with a leaping catch, and then he broke Mike Trout's bat, and Trout just dumped a little duck snort in front of a charging Kevin Pillar, and those were the two hits that got him in trouble. He falls behind Albert Pujols 3-1 and then gets that double play. And that's why he was so pumped up, and then his Gibby sending him out for the eighth inning. He says adds to his confidence. He's going to keep the ball until John Gibbons takes it from his hands. People helping out, doing the research for us here on Blue Jays Talk. The caller talked about how the Blue Jays offense was inconsistent because they've scored in double digits 8 times and have scored 3 runs or less 17 times. The New York Yankees, who are in first place in the American League East, have scored 3 runs a game or fewer 16 times this season. Thank you to at Jeff Besh on the Twitter for that. And the road guy, at the road guy, with a couple of underscores in there, mentions that the St. Louis Cardinals have 15 games of 3 runs scored or less. The Cardinals with the best record in Major League Baseball, 15 games with 3 runs scored or less. And they're 7-8 in those games. Again, like I said, the pitching is the issue. The offense is not the issue. Every single time a pitcher has a ball in his hand, he's got the advantage over a hitter. Every single time. Hitting's really hard. Scoring a ton of runs. Really hard. And the Blue Jays are the best team in the major leagues at doing it. Mike is in Markham. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I think it's time for Alex to go, and I'd like to use some logic to explain why.
Always. Logic is always welcomed on this program.
Since the Jays are in last place now, it's not unlikely, or it's possible, that they may be in last place come the trade deadline.
Okay, remember that we always have to let the facts get in the way of the facts, right? The Blue Jays are in last place right now. They are 2 games out of third place.
I know that. But what I'm saying
is, they're 4.5 games out of first place.
Right. It's possible they'll still be in last place on trade deadline.
Right. But if they're in last place at the trade deadline at 4.5 games back, that's not a bad thing.
Well, let me just finish. If we also use the logic that the AL East is the weaker division, it's quite possible their only chance of making the playoffs is to win the division.
Fair.
So, if they're in last place come the trade deadline, then no matter how far back they are, games-wise...
Don't say that, because it's wrong.
What's
you
wrong?
Want logic,
yeah.
Right? We want logic. And
what
logic states that if you, what you said was no matter how many games back they are. If they're 5 games back and in last place, the trade deadline...
You didn't let me finish.
Because you said no matter how many games back they are.
But you didn't let me finish.
All right, go ahead.
No matter how many games back they are, if they're in last place, they still have to pass 4 teams.
Right.
Okay. So, they're in last place, and they've got four teams to pass in the remaining 2 months of the season.
Yep.
They might do it. They may not do it. But here's my point. This is a business. You got to protect against the downside. If they're in a position where come trade deadline, they want to make some franchise-adjusting moves, do you really want Alex Anthopoulos to be the person making those decisions?
And I have suggested that same thing. It's true over the course of this season that if the plan is to fire Alex Anthopoulos at the end of the season, then why would you let Alex make those trades? If you're going to fire him, why would you let him blow the team up at the end of July? And and that is a very cromulent point. I will give you that.
And his boss is here only to the end of the year anyways.
Yes.
So, you know, like, the Jays are going to have to turn it around, and they'll still get a chance to turn it around. Micah just will be under a different GM. I just don't see the point in waiting to the end of the year.
Well, see, for me, I think that Alex Anthopoulos doesn't deserve to lose his job. I think that he's done quite a good job as a general manager. I think he's set this team up very, very well for the future. I think the starting pitching that they've got coming, it's just silly. And this team has a chance in 2 or 3 years to have the best starting pitching in Major League Baseball and still have it all be quite affordable.
But none of that's gonna change if he's gone. And I'm just saying that if they're going to get a new president, that guy's going to want his own GM anyways. And the GM's going to want his own manager anyways.
He may. That all might be true. That's not a reason to fire a general manager.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're running this as a business and you're looking at what's the worst possible thing that could happen, to me, the worst possible thing could happen is come the trade deadline, you got a bunch of guys that may even ask to be traded, and who's the person that's going to be doing that, making those deals?
All right, well, you're coming at it from a very different angle than I'm coming at it from. I don't expect this team to be in last place in July, and I'm certainly not going to be planning on May 19th that 2 months down the road this is going to be a last place team. That's the way you want to play it. I mean, that's your prerogative, I guess. I just don't think that that's the way you should look at it. We'll be back 7 o'clock tomorrow, and we'll see you then.